Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, in shape fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifted. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. I am heat express, young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't sit there, y'all ready, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life for you. Success, success, young, young, fresh, fresh.
And welcome to 2016. Thank you so much for stopping by. Of course, it's your boys, Joseph Haas there, Amiri Tulla here. Haas, my man, how are you?
Doing great. Awesome. Can't believe it. Another Sunday. In case people didn't hear that, that was March 6th. It's a Sunday. Bright and early. Wow. Talk about news hitting you smack in the face. And I'm not even talking about all the fight night that went on Saturday night. You know we're going to talk UFC. You know we're going to talk boxing. You know we're going to keep it NFL. I'm not going to avoid the pink elephant in the room, Amiri. You know we're going to talk our Peyton Manning memories, NCAA heating up. Who says this is the slow time of the sports season? Why am I still talking, Amiri? Are you ready to talk some Jets football? Or wait. That's how we start every show. You know, I get into the Jets football stuff, but today I figure I take us back a little bit. About 3.5 years ago, all right, I get a little message in my inbox from someone I hadn't met yet who said they wanted to have me, a young Jets blogger, on their radio show. And I go, hey, why not? Why not try a little interview? I get on the mic, and here I am, impressed by this young, amazing journalist who asks in-depth, thoughtful questions. And then I find out how old he is, and I'm like, wow, talk about child prodigy. Can't wait to work with this guy. And, of course, it only took a couple of weeks. We put ourselves a little show together. We call that Bad Boy Jets in 30. We got that bad boy going. We pumped that out real well. That got us here on Fan versus Fan and the Green and White Show. We developed that and have been taking that. You're riding it. 125 shows. I mean, I can't thank you enough and can't go any further without saying, Amiri, happy birthday, my brother.
Thank you, Haas. Yeah, I mean, it's been a while. We've seen the progression of myself. So it's great to continue to be on, you know, this show with you. Mm-hmm. It's on, like I said back then when I first reached out to you, I'm sure, I was in the same mindset I am in now, just looking up at somebody like yourself who has been able to, you know, consistently man this ship here at the Green and White Show and back then Jets in 30 for years. So thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that completely, my man. You know, you're the younger brother I didn't have. I mean, I do have a younger brother, but I feel like I've watched him grow up from far away. Okay, people, we'll stop all the mushiness and hugging. He's going to have some cake during the show, I'm pretty sure. But now, why am I still talking? Are you guys all ready to talk some Jets football or what?
Yes, sir, Haas. Yes, sir. So Jets have had an interesting week. The NFL has had an interesting week, especially with the news later today, or earlier today, really. It's the big news that Peyton Manning has called it quits. He will retire, and you know, on the heels of what he did this season, it kind of makes a little bit of sense when it comes to his ultimate decision. So, I mean, I when it comes to NFL conversation, when it comes to what we're discussing now, there's no ramification that's too little when it comes to the retirement of Peyton Manning. It will definitely affect New York Jets in the AFC. Your thoughts, Haas, really, Peyton Manning's decision and your thoughts and reflections on his career?
I mean, you look at a guy, and I know the mic's cutting a little bit in and out on you there, Murray, but talking about memories of Peyton Manning and his career. I mean, I know, of course, being the old man on the podcast here, I can go way back to watching him over at Tennessee and, you know, just hearing about, you know, Archie Manning's kid coming up and you know, running the ship over there at Tennessee and playing the extra year. And, of course, Jets fans, a little bittersweet there, probably wishing that Peyton Manning was – you know, came out that year early and had a possibility of being on their roster. But, you know, he goes, he's drafted by the Indianapolis Colts. And you know, it was a rocky first couple of seasons for a quarterback that everybody knew would be, you know, on the way upward and onward. And sure enough, he was, Amiri. It didn't take too long after that for the Colts to really get that.
So it looks like Haas might disagree for 30 minutes. A little bit about Peyton Manning, and I would agree with him from the perspective of, and I think most NFL fans who make this statement are in the right when it comes to Peyton Manning's impact on the field from his days back to Indianapolis to where he is now or his last season with Denver. It has become a situation where Peyton Manning's legacy will be greatly influenced, and like we remember Peyton Manning by will be heavily based on what he did on the field. But I think to a certain degree, what he also did off the field, the way that he carried himself, and the kind of the way that he led the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos, that's another aspect of his legacy that I think has been cemented over the years. But as far as, you know, when I think one of the things that happens when we talk about Peyton Manning is, especially in the past, we tend to bring up the lack of accomplishments, the lack of accolades, right? The lack of championships is the big one. And I think that conversation is right, Haas, but there haven't been as many quarterbacks that have been as technically sound, you know, mechanically speaking at the quarterback position. There haven't been a lot of quarterbacks who have been able to consistently take teams and have them give them successful seasons. And Peyton Manning has had that characteristic throughout his entire long NFL career.
Hey, JG, a little technical difficulty there. Glad to be back on. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming through.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Okay, more about Peyton Manning and, of course, technical difficulty, as you say. One of the more technical, like you said, sound quarterbacks that you'll see, guy, I mean, his accuracy, almost second to none there in terms of the way he was able to lead that team and the way he was able to just, you know, throw the ball downfield, be such an just aggressive with the way he's able to call the ball game from the line of scrimmage. You start to see more and more of that now all around the league. It's not like it didn't go on before, but he kind of, you know, brought everybody's attention and eyes to it. Just an outstanding a career for the guy, you know, going out on top, winning a Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and then closing out the career with a Super Bowl win in Denver. Yeah, he might not have been able to put up those numbers you're used to seeing from a Peyton Manning. Yeah, he might not have run the show like you're used to seeing. But in the end, what do we all say when it comes to these games? It's all about the W. And in the end, he was able to help his team get that W.
Yeah. Let me ask you this then. This is a question I think a lot of people had immediately after the Super Bowl victory. Because I think, Haas, I think most of us thought that Peyton Manning was not coming back. The career going out on the top was something that he could only imagine, really. So I don't think he would want to jeopardize, you know, that final game, you know, to have to come back and potentially not play as well. But let me ask you this question. If Peyton Manning did not win the Super Bowl, and let's say Denver went valiant effort but lost, would he have played next year, right?
You know, you kind of wonder that, and with the time that he did take off in between winning the big game and then you know, taking his time to have his announcement come out, and still not official until Monday. Chris Mortensen, ESPN, reporting early this morning about 7:30 coming across the Twitterverse. Would he have come back for another season? Would he have been effective? Would he have come back and been a Denver Bronco? I think a lot of that plays into what the decision was. Is he going to want to go pick up with another team, start kind of that all over again just for possibly one or two seasons? Maybe that played into consideration. Even if he did lose this game, would it have been the best idea for Peyton Manning to call it quits? I really think so, Amir. I think that this should have been win or lose Peyton Manning's last game. And it was great to see him win it, just so he can kind of go out on top. He's had a wonderful career, headed straight to Canton, not Omaha, as we all heard Eli saying, a little montage written there by Tom Rinaldi on ESPN. Very poetic, very powerful. You're just hoping that you're glad that the story did have the ending that we all want.
Right, and that was kind of the cherry on the top, I guess, of what was, you know, a big career. Peyton Manning. It is interesting about conversation. What would have happened if, for example, he did, you know, not even, let's say, to make it postseason, would he have abruptly, you know, called it quits? I think a lot of that would have depended on it. We saw it change in the season, Haas. It just looked like Peyton Manning could not play health-wise. Looked like he could be out of it. So I think from that perspective, that's, I think, you know, Manning definitely made a decision, and from that standpoint, that hit, what happened in his career, you know, the last years was going to be largely predicated on how he was. Made a decision. I think
right.
The health would have a huge.
Now your mic.
So.
I know it's getting a little rough there here, Amiri. I think he got a little icing in the mic there. got a little icing in the mic there. It's bobbing back and forth. We do hear, you know, a lot of – and also, you know, I really did want a keener perspective from you because, I mean, Peyton Manning, all you've known is the great Peyton Manning. And now to see somebody that you know, you've known always to be this gladiator, to always have been, you know, kind of a guy who's been on top in the NFL, to see that guy kind of retire, I can imagine how one of those feel. And I remember back when, you know, when I first started to understand football and watch football as a fan. Yeah, I'm going to date myself on this one. But, I mean, it was those 49er teams for me as a 49er fan, but living locally here as well, you know, with the New York Giants, when I started to see the Lawrence Taylors call it a career, the Harry Carsons call it a career, you know, for me, the Joe Montanas, you know, call it a career, even though he got to move to Kansas City. But, you know, when you see those players where, you know, you come into a game, you watch the game, they're great, and then you start to see them decline and then in the end retire, you know, it's kind of like a check mark. Someone tells me you're never going to forget your 16th birthday as Peyton Manning. The word comes down from the great Chris Mortensen of ESPN on Twitter. Yes, it should be made official in Denver on Monday. Peyton Manning calling it a career. Green and White Show, Amiri Tulik there, Joseph Haas here. Remember, you can always follow us both on Twitter. Follow Amiri Tulik on Twitter at Amiri Tulik. You can always follow me on Twitter as well at Jersey Haas. Remember, you can get us both 24/7 sports talk, thoughts, and more. Well, a little bit more in the news of NFL football as we work on a little technical difficulty here. And, you know, it's Blog Talk, so when is it not technically difficult? We'll get into a little bit more of the NFL as I bring Amiri back in. How's it going there, buddy?
Good. Sorry about that.
No problem. Sounding awesome, by the way. Just wrapping up on Peyton right quick, and I did want to get some final thoughts from you, my man, on watching a guy who, like I said, I'm pretty much as long as you've been around, he's been around. So what's it going to be like, you know, going into an NFL season and not having Peyton Manning to break down?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, considering the proximity from the Jets standpoint, considering the proximity he has with New York and just the way that New York and Peyton have kind of intertwined over the years, that's always going to be something that you think about during a season but will be missing. I mean, you know, think about how many times the Jets have had their postseason opportunities. You know, we remember back in the Sanchez days, right? Those big games against the Colts, sorry. From the Jets standpoint, it'll be a gap in the system, I guess. But then just from an NFL fan, I mean, I think if you consider yourself an NFL fan, you can't be looking at this a decision, whether you're a Peyton lover or a Peyton hater, you can't be looking at this decision, you know, happily, right? Like, this is one of those things where it's a negative, I think, personally for the league, because you're losing out on a talent that clearly has, you know, over his time, really transitioned and been at the forefront of that transition to a more passing heavy league. So from that perspective, I think if you're an NFL fan, you love football, Haas. I mean, both of I would tend to agree in this area. There's really no positive to what the decision is, but from the perspective of trying to, you know, figure out a way to move forward, if you're the Jets, I don't know if this is necessarily the worst decision by Peyton Manning.
Right. You know, Jets fans will remember that he could have been a Jet, but moving on, the Denver Broncos. The only reason I like it puts punctuation on what's been, you know, a very long sentence, a very good, you know, an outstanding, a Hall of Fame, almost second to none career by Peyton Manning. Remember, he now has the NFL record in touchdowns with 51, tied for the most games won with Brett Favre. Just an outstanding career, and it's good. And how this can impact the rest of the league, Amiri, is yes, he transitions from being an active on the field player, but here's where Peyton Manning, the NFL ambassador, everybody's always going to identify him with the NFL, possibly Papa John's and Budweiser now, but
right.
There we go, Peyton Manning, synonymous with beer and football,
right?
With beer and pizza, but yeah, just I mean, really. Just it's gonna be tough not hearing the Omahas and not seeing number 18 and hearing him always very measured, always, you know, just a consummate professional, as we try to be here on the Green and White Show. So we'll give the rest of the NFL a little bit of due. We'll get in and out with guests as far as Peyton Manning memories, as we're hashtagging Manning memories, and thanks Peyton for all the great memories. But others not having great memories so far this past week in the NFL. The Bills part ways with Mario Williams. He's been cut. We'll look to see where that great defender ends up. Roddy White, a long time and the top, you know, receiver in Atlanta Falcons history. He was released earlier this week as well. He could find himself a soft landing spot on a roster as well. Arian Foster and the Houston Texans part ways, and also you'll see we all know Matt Forte is out there on the block. So some interesting players out there and on the loose. Out of the ones I mentioned, or any you can think of, Amiri, any player that you saw get released, or a player that, you know, has parted ways with the team that that interests you, or kind of piqued, you know, got your eye.
As far as the Jets are concerned, right?
Oh no, as far as any team is concerned, just
right.
In terms of cuts, you know, you always get this around this time of the year. There's, you know, some players possibly too old. When you've got a franchise players, tender, you know, transition tag players, things of that nature, sometimes it just, you know, the rubber meets the road with a player like Arian Foster, who loves the Texans,
right,
and the Texans
right.
love him. So are there any other players out there that you saw get cut, or maybe a cut that you remember that you went, wow, wonder how the league's going to change after this one?
Well, remember, I mean, early this, as far as this offseason is concerned, I don't know if I was surprised, but it did take me aback when Roddy White was released by the by the Atlanta Falcons, just because of the magnitude of success that he has had in Atlanta. Really been the franchise's up there with up there as far as one of their greatest receivers in the franchise. So seeing him get cut was a little jarring, as is the case with, I think, a lot of those type of players. And then from the Jets' perspective, I mean, we went back to Antonio Cromartie last week. That was obviously a huge news. And then when it comes to other receivers, Andre Johnson was cut by the Colts as well. So that was an interesting
right.
change by Indianapolis. So there have been a few big names that have dropped yet. But I'm interested in seeing as we propel closer to the draft. You know, that's when it really kicks up, and it'll be interesting to see specifically how the Jets move and maneuver, because they obviously have a lot of gaps to fill, and we've discussed this in the past. Will they attack those gaps via free agency, or will they attack those gaps via the draft? So cuts will be a huge deciding aspect in that conversation.
Right, free agency pick it up March 9th. As for the New York Jets and what they're concerned with, they've applied the franchise tag to Mo Wilkerson, so he'll make 15 plus this season. Again, not the security of a longer term contract, but he should be pretty happy with the paychecks he'll be receiving on a weekly basis from the New York Jets. Looking to see if Snacks Harrison ends up ends up back with the Jets as well. I've loved watching him grow as a player and would love to continue to see him grow in green and white. How about watching Coach McAdoo grow as a head coach there with the New York Giants? We're hearing, you know, Coach Coughlin, former coach, Tom Coughlin hanging around the facility a little bit. Coach McAdoo, unfazed. It's his job. You know, he's very comfortable in his own skin right now, so we're hearing those reports. Another report out of Giants camp, Amiri. Panthers, who cut defensive captain Charles Johnson, he's going to be visiting the New York Giants today. And as far as defense is concerned, we all know they need a lot of help up front, so he could be an addition. Amiri, your thoughts on the New York Giants and how they're proceeding with their offseason?
Yeah, the Giants have had a similar position, in my opinion, similar to the Jets, where it's from the perspective of there have been a lot of opportunities for the Giants to make moves because they need gaps. Or they have gaps, and they need players to fill those. You know, when it comes to, I mean, offensively, the offensive line needs so much just upheaval. And on the defensive aspect, same can be said for the D-line, just so much upheaval. So there are a lot of things and a lot of itineraries and a lot of items to do, scratch off of that to-do list as the offseason continues. But when it comes to some of the players that I think the Giants need to part way with, I mean, one guy, we talked about him last year, this is still probably the biggest question for me is what are the Giants going to do with Jason Pierre-Paul moving forward? And how will that decision affect what they can do this year? You know, when it comes to somebody on the defensive line, again, an aspect of the Giants that has not been good, or at least not been consistently good, you know, that's the position that the Giants need to address. You know, when it comes to, again, the offensive line, when it comes to the running back position as well, their secondary needs some improvement. Don't have any really solid safeties on that team. No standout corners that really catch my eye initially. Not much depth in those two departments. So there are a lot of areas that the Giants, I think, can work in. But the big question for me is do the Giants want to try and get this, you know, quick solution by signing players? Or do they want to build for the future? And, I mean, for me personally, I would not have any problem with trying to build for the future. But what I would say is right now in the NFC East, it's a hole, right? It's wide open. And so if there's a time you want to jump, it's right now, you know?
Exactly. And let's not forget, Amiri, you know, you've got Eli Manning, and you know, we're talking about Peyton Manning retiring here. Eli Manning is not really long for the NFL anymore. I mean, he's got possibly, okay, let's go five on the long end, five, six good, you know, seasons left. I'm not saying it's the end of Eli Manning right now, but, you know, how many of those seasons is he going to be a prime NFL quarterback or at his best as he seems to be right now? You know, you've got to take advantage of having yourself, you know, a quarterback in an offense that he's comfortable with now. You've got outstanding player on the outside like Odell Beckham Jr. The offense looks like, you know, they want to go in that direction, and it's time for the defense to be able to kind of hold its weight, keep the Giants in football games, have them get a few more wins than losses. So you want to kind of build this defense. So I would love a nice mix. You're going to see a whole lot of turnover on that Giants defense, Amiri. I'd love to see a nice mix of free agents and then some youthful, kind of inject some youth in there as well. Watch these players grow with the team. Kind of like how the New York Jets did it, Amiri. You know what I mean? With their front line, you know, solid guy like Mo Wilkerson, bringing a guy like Snacks along, you know, trying to supplement the defensive line. Don't forget, you know, they picked guys like Golston and Copels. They took some swings and misses, but they also, you know, took some good made some good picks as well, as we all saw with Leonard this past season. So building through free agency, building through the draft, we're going to see the Giants put in a whole lot of work. Somebody who always puts in work when he's here. Amiri Tillick, you know he gets his work on. Always ready to skate. A strong shift. I Zamboni it a little bit. You know what I mean? I come in here and there. You see a 6-goal game from the Flyers last night. We wonder about Henrik Lundqvist and his injury and whether he's going to be able to pick it up. But always on the ice, ready to skate. A strong shift. Amiri with ice time.
Yes, sir. A lot to get to with the NHL. The season is progressing rapidly, and we're moving to a point where now the conversation begins to come to what the postseason leverage and what the postseason possibilities is going to look like. I want to touch on something, though, that doesn't really affect on the ice necessarily, Haas, but it relates to the NHL draft. I don't know if you saw this past the news ticker, but the NHL is wondering, exploring the possibility of raising the age of the draft to 19, and that is a year up from their current status of 18, and that's going to be an interesting change, because I think in hockey, more than any other sport, perhaps. Like, we don't see this as much in the NFL, obviously. We don't see this as, I think baseball is the only other sport where you get such young talent in. And there have been players in this league who came in, you know, into a program at 17, was developed, worked on, and then wind up excelling at age 18 and starting. And I think the reason for that is because hockey is such an international sport. So you get these players who aren't necessarily from America, so they don't necessarily and are committed to hockey, obviously. So they're not necessarily in it for going to college, for example, and taking out that year, but they want to get on the ice as soon as possible. And so we've seen that in the past. So the raising of the age from the NHL's perspective, according to their player development, you know, department, it's basically saying that they want to improve the conditions for player development. And he says preliminary conversations, but for me, I what I would say is, though, I think a lot of players that come into the league at age 18 have proven that they're capable, right? If you're in the league at 18, then you know you have the skill set. You know you have the talent. The only question is the maturity, but as you're around players who are 10 years older than you, you know, on day in and day out basis, those things pick up. So I don't think the NHL needs to worry necessarily about the lack of development when it comes to their age. I just want to throw that question out there, Haas. Do you see that in any other sports at all?
No. I agree with your take on it completely. I disagree with what the NHL is planning on doing. I think staying at 18 is fine for every reason you just brought up. It's a little different in the NHL. It kind of mirrors the baseball perspective where, you know, you're getting them in young. If baseball's where you want to go, then you're in the minor leagues. You're learning the craft. You're working at it. If college is what you want to do and that's what your choice, then fine. Go ahead and do that. But there's a track for you if you're a young athlete with the talent that everybody sees is out there. They give you all the opportunity. I like that same perspective in hockey. And I don't really think that they're moving it up from 18 to 19 is going to be a benefit. More, I think you're going to be aging out, you know, a player or two here or there who could be making an impact on the league. So I'm saying keep the age the way it is.
Right. I think that's the move that the NHL should, you know, stick with when it comes to this age conversation. But like Haas, you know, Taylor Hall was from the Edmonton Oilers. He's the assistant captain. He was the number one pick in the draft in 2010. He was 18. You know, he began his career at 18. Now he's 24. So, like, he's clearly a prime example, but those are just situations that show that if you are of that age and if you are capable skill set-wise, you should belong in the league. So it'll be interesting to see how that conversation continues, Haas, moving forward. But yeah, as far as the NHL is concerned, Haas, a lot of conversation now entering the realm of what's going on for the postseason. We're about 66, 67 games in for a lot of these teams. So we have a chunk of the season left, about a fourth of the season left to play. But when it comes to the Eastern Conference, it's still Washington with a dominant lead. They have really kind of walked away with this at this point. They have 100 points. The Rangers are the next closest with 82. So I think that tells the story in the Metropolitan Division. But then in general, the same can be said overall in the East. So Washington is really representing the Eastern Conference right now. And on the West, there isn't a team that's anywhere near Washington. So Washington has put up the best team in the league status. 85 points for Chicago leads the Central Division in the West. And then it's 82 with Anaheim in the Pacific. So running away with it is Washington in the NHL thus far, Haas.
Yeah, I was looking for the Sharks to come up and give somebody a bite. Might not happen for me this season, but a lot of great NHL convo there and also a great topic there. Remember, folks, Green and White Show every Sunday, 8 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to hit you with a quick Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout. Get us to the 8:30 mark where we're going to get in our first guest. And here we go.
Indeed, Haas. The listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at JG Sports Talk and jgsportstalk.com. And you can also find me as well at Amiri Tulla on Twitter, AmiriTulloch.
Everybody knows they can find me 24/7 on Twitter at Jersey Haas. Don't forget my inbox is your inbox, Joseph Haas, NFL@gmail.com. Hostile Interpretations will be up and running soon, under construction right now. Always up and running, never under construction. Technical difficulties aside, Sundays, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can catch Amiri there, Joseph Haas here on the Green and White Show. We keep the party going. And right about now, I want to get a little bit of news and notes in while we can. All right, before we get our first guest in, other NFL players who are going to be sticking with their team. Sam Bradford gets an extension. Joe Flacco gets an extension. Kirk Cousins accepts the tender offer. Those are three quarterbacks. We're talking about two of them in that NFC East that you were talking about being so fragile, Amiri. So Sam Bradford gets paid. Some skeptical. Joe Flacco gets paid a huge signing bonus, $40 million for that three-year extension. And the Washington Redskins have made their decision at quarterback. Which one of these decisions which one do you agree with the most, and which one leaves you kind of scratching your head?
Well, let's tackle the Washington Redskins one real quick, just because, you know, the conversation when it comes to RG3 has really engulfed that team. I think when it comes to Washington at the quarterback position, it's clear that they've run out of opportunities, run out of plan for RG3. So when it comes to their decision at the quarterback position, I think it's obviously without RG3 in mind, right? Like at this point, when you look at this team, it's pretty clear that they just look past RG3, and their decision making. And so it might be sad from the standpoint of here's a guy who, again, we talked about this in the past, has such a potential, but hasn't really panned out. But when it comes to Kirk Cousins and his potential, I guess, with Washington, I don't know if Kirk Cousins has the higher ceiling. I still am going to hold out hope that RG3 can bounce back somewhere in the league. But what I would say is Kirk Cousins is not a bad candidate. You know, I don't think he's a great quarterback. I don't think he's a quarterback that's going to go out there and redefine the game or change the way that the Washington Redskins offense is set up.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, you know, and I think for those that watched the team last year, he is capable of putting up victories. He is capable of leading the team in a positive direction. My question, though, is Kirk Cousins going to be – is Kirk Cousins going to separate this team from decent to and make them go to a postseason, you know, level? I don't know if Kirk Cousins can do that on a consistent basis. I don't know if he can take the Redskins to where they want to go, at least in you know, the postseason.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Something tells me when they make the postseason, Kirk Cousins is going to come right on here and tell you, you like that. You like that. I know we always like when we get our buddy, the Reverend Ralph Mancini, joining us on the program to talk. Hey, we'll continue the Kirk Cousins conversation. We'll get into a little bit more of that. We're also going to talk Manning memories. It's Peyton Manning. We'll be making an official on Monday. He'll be retiring. Reverend Ralph, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, number one, it's a celebration. We'll pass the Reverend a slice of birthday cake as well, as we're celebrating Amiri's birthday here. But we're also celebrating the end of a great career, Reverend Ralph. How about starting us off with the memory of Peyton Manning and your thoughts as you wake up today and you find out it'll be official on Monday, Manning calling it a career?
Well, you know, look, I'm glad that he finally made a decision. And I'm glad that he's stepping away. I mean, he's doing it at the right time, off a Super Bowl victory. And, you know, I heard rumblings that he wanted to stick around, that he wanted to continue playing. But in reality, I think the only way I could have endorsed something like that, and it's not for me to, to endorse or anything like that, but I think if he would have came back as a backup, I think that would have been perfect. But, you know, Peyton Manning's not going to play backup to anybody. So, once again, he did it at the right time, and I'm glad that he finally made up his mind. When we talk about Manning memories, what are the things that I remember most about him? I guess just in general, just, you know, the great regular seasons that he had, some of the comeback victories that he had. I seem to remember there was one game a few years back against the Miami Dolphins. It was a Monday night game. Where the Dolphins just they held the ball for like it seemingly like the whole game, and it looked like they were controlling the game. But yet, you know, Peyton Manning, he just led his team back and to an improbable victory. So you know, we seem, you know, maybe some people seem to forget, you know, because Manning hasn't been the same over the past couple of years with his diminished arm strength. I mean, Peyton Manning in his prime, I mean, he was just hard to stop. Every time he had the ball, it didn't matter. You know, if he only had the ball like four, five, six times a game, or whatever it was, when he had the ball, he was going to score. So there was a period of time, a long period of time, where Peyton Manning, he was just an unstoppable force.
Now, when it comes to, you know, what people will remember Peyton Manning as, what's the item or what's the quality or characteristics of him on the field but also off the field? You know, can you combine that that you think will remember Peyton Manning for the most? Like, what aspect of him and his career stands out to you when you look at it in the complete picture?
Yeah, to me, what stands out the most is his love of the game and his preparation, you know. I mean, I'm going to say this in a good way. He was just a football nerd, and still is. The way he prepares, what he expects out of his teammates, and you know, his gestures at the line, you know, sometimes, you know, for some people it might be annoying, but that's just the type of competitor he is. He's going to do everything possible to confuse his opponents, to get the upper hand. To me, what stands out about him is just his love of the game. And it's a term that's used a lot. I think it's used too much. You know, a lot of times when we look at players coming out from college, you know, people ask them, you know, what is it that makes you stand out? And people say love of the game. And a lot of times it's just lip service. But that wasn't the case with Peyton Manning. I mean, he was totally 1,000% committed to football and being the best player he could be. I think that's one of the things that I'm always going to remember about him.
So one of the questions that Haas and I were posing earlier is, you know, when it comes to what he did this past season, if he had not won the Super Bowl and if he had a career that kind of experienced a last disappointing game in the Super Bowl. Would he have retired, do you think? Would he have retired if him and the Broncos didn't make it past in that Super Bowl?
I kind of have a feeling that he would have, just because the reports state that even a lot of his family members pushed him to retire. I know his father, from what I hear, wanted him to call it quits. Because they realized that, hey, you know, this guy, he went through a lot and physically, you know, four neck surgeries. The game just, it takes a toll on you. I mean, the guy is 40 years old. He has nothing else to prove. I mean, he's got more money than, you know, he knows what to do with. I think he would have called it quits, even without a second Super Bowl on his ledger. Absolutely.
Adam Amiri Tulik there, Joseph Haas here, Green and White Show, being joined by the Reverend Ralph Mancini. To accentuate your point, Darren Revell tweets out, Peyton Manning has earned $249 million. That's on the field. That's also an NFL record. Off the field earnings going anywhere around the $100 million mark, and we don't see that stopping any time soon. I'd love to see what Peyton Manning ends up doing with himself kind of after the game. But moving right along to some other NFL kind of news and notes. We know that free agency is around the corner. We're all going to be, you know, waiting by our phones or looking to see who's going to be the first ones official as it's free agency March 9th. We're going to see some players get signed. Is there a player out there that you just can't wait to see where he lands first, or just a player out there that you can't wait for a team to just go out there and give the big money to?
Yeah, there are a few players like that. I'm going to give you a couple of big names. We talked about Matt Forte a couple of weeks. I can't wait to see where he goes. He's a player that I'm a big fan of, and I think he is going to be a difference maker. Even though he's 30 years old, and you know that's kind of the age when running backs start falling off the cliff, I still think that he has a lot to offer as a runner, as a receiver, even as a blocker. Another guy that I'm going to be looking at is Mario Williams. Yeah, he's coming off a down year. But, you know, I think you put him in a 4-3. I think he still has a lot to offer as well as a pure pass rusher, as a pure defensive end. You know, not a hybrid guy, not a you know, a linebacker that's going to drop back at the coverage. That's just not his game.
Right.
I think he has a lot to offer. And there are a lot of teams that need a player like that. I mean, the New York Giants, the Oakland Raiders, even the Dallas Cowboys. So I think he's going to get a lot of money in free agency. And I'm going to even bring up maybe like one underrated guy that a lot of people aren't talking about. You know, we just spoke about Peyton Manning retiring as a Bronco. Well, the Broncos have, you know, probably a couple of guys that they're not going to be able to re-sign. And one of them is Danny Trevathan, the three-down linebacker, Danny Trevathan, only 26 years old. It looks like that the Broncos might not be able to sign him, to re-sign him. And as I said, this guy is a three-down linebacker with coverage skills, and there are a lot of teams that are going to look to sign him. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the Chicago Bears, bring him in. John Fox was coaching him, a couple of years ago. So, there are plenty of names out there, and there are plenty of guys, difference makers, that are going to make a lot of money. And I emphasize difference makers.
Right.
These are the guys that are going to earn the money. Yes, some of them will get overpaid, but a lot of these guys are players that could come in and make an immediate impact.
Yeah, when it comes to football, you know what, Amiri, and Ralph, I'm going to tell you this, man. I almost never go with the overpaid mark because, I mean, these guys, they don't have guaranteed contracts. I say get as much as you can get because, you know, you never know. You never know if you can recover from an injury as serious as Peyton Manning had and recover and still be able to come back and win a Super Bowl or end up with an injury and not be able to be the player that you were or be able to come back and be impactful. Somebody who's always impactful, man, every time he joins us on the program. Before you leave us, Reverend Ralph, let us know your new digs and give us a little bit more about you before you head off.
Yeah, so I'll be announcing it on Twitter pretty soon. I'm going to be writing for a website called Sportster.com. And pretty much I'm just going to be talking a lot about football, a lot about baseball, and a lot about fantasy sports in general. So I'll be announcing it on Twitter. I'll be coming out with my first article later this week. So, yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
And, you know, you always have a home here on the Green and White Show. Come on, discuss your articles. We'll get that pumping as well. Reverend Ralph, always a pleasure, my man. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll catch you again next week.
Okay, great, guys. Always fun.
Yes,
thanks. Thanks a lot there. Reverend Ralph, always joining us, always bringing a special take. Good to hear him, being able to jump on with that website as well and start pumping out some more articles. Always interested in his take. Nice take there on Peyton Manning. He had a very, very, very detailed take on Mario Williams. Yeah, I think that he's going to end up impacting next season in one way, shape, or form, whatever team he lands on. It was a bad year up there for him in Buffalo. He's been a little disgruntled. I can see him making an impact next season. You know, he's still got it. He's a force on the football field. He just wasn't into dropping back. So let's have him, you know, put his hand in the dirt. Let's really get him up against the – he's going to impact the line of scrimmage on the defensive side of the ball. Can't wait to see him, you know, put his hand in the dirt for whichever team. Who knows? It might be your Giants, Amiri.
That would be interesting. That would very be yeah. Because, you know, we've talked about this, the Giants' line position on both sides of the ball needs some improvement. So a player with such explosiveness like himself, I think that would initiate, I think, the change that the Giants are hoping to employ here moving forward.
Right, Green and White Show. As we always say, Amiri Tillich there, Joseph Haas here. Let's get another news and note in before we get joined by our next guest. Yes, NCAA March Madness. We're going to talk a lot more about that next week as Selection Sunday rolls around next weekend. But a couple tickets punched, as they say, already in the governor's of Austin Peay. That's right, the governors. We're going to have the governors in. Also, Yale, you know, the Bulldogs, but I call them the Bonesmen, the Skull and Bonesmen for their secret society. Yale makes it into the tournament, 1962. AFK was actually still around then. I won't bring that up either. Yale makes it into the tournament. So, two are in, Don't worry. Many more tickets will be punched before we're sitting here putting brackets together. You know what, Amiri? We should try to do a little bracket challenge there. We'll do a little bracket challenge. I wonder what the stakes will be there. But I can't wait to see if I can. I've been horrible at brackets. I'm telling you, I was one of those guys who picked Arizona when they weren't winning. I tend to pick a Kansas sometimes, a UNC. So my heart has been broken. I've had many of brackets are busted. Oh, 1 year I picked Syracuse. They lost in the second game. I was like, ah. So there's so many brackets that end up getting busted this time of year. So can't wait for a little NCAA. Is there a team out there that you're interested in?
Well, now I think everybody just became a kind of a Yale fan, right? I'm interested in seeing how Yale can progress. But as far as the rest, you know, my college basketball knowledge isn't the greatest. You're going to have to help me out here, Haas. When it comes to is Syracuse going to be in the hunt this year? Because Syracuse was always my team. Or are they a little on the fringe right now?
No. They're going to be able I can see them making a push. They'll be able to get themselves into a tournament, I believe. Also, you're going to end up seeing the guys like the UNCs of the world who ended up winning the outright ACC title last night in a game over Duke. Can you believe that? They've got 30 outright ACC titles. The next closest, Duke with 19. Nobody else with double digits. So UNC far and away out there. But will they be able to take that all the way? You're going to see teams like Oklahoma. Don't forget the guys at Sparty. Don't forget Michigan State, who's always out there. Hey, when you're on the East Coast, you got to think Villanova. Will Jay Wright be able to put a couple of wins together and get his team out of the first week? There's going to be a lot that we talk about, and I'd be remiss if I talked college basketball and didn't bring up my Scarlet Knights. Not because they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. No. They're not even close. But last night they smashed Minnesota and break their 32-game Big Ten losing streak. They will not go winless in the Big Ten this season. It took until the last game for them to get that victory, though. Other news and notes around the world of sports. Hey, man, Aroldis Chapman, dude. He gets 30 games, no appeal. Let me get your quick take on the Chapman situation out there with the New York Yankees, Amiri. Agree or disagree with him, kind of? I mean, it kind of looks like they made an agreement there between Chapman and MLB. All right, you give me 30, I won't appeal. You don't mess up my free agency. What are your thoughts on this little, one hand washing the other?
Right. I mean, you know, when it comes to the whole controversy, I mean, it's been a really contentious kind of discussion over the past few weeks to when it comes to what baseball is doing. What I would say, though, is when it comes to domestic abuse, I hope Major League Baseball didn't take that concession, because on the one hand, I understand what Chapman's perspective is. You know, he's looking at the best interests of himself as a player and trying to get some opportunities, but I wonder whether or not Major League Baseball took that stand, because if so, I don't think that should be right when it comes to a crime or it comes to a situation as meaningful as that, as meaningful mm-hmm. as what Chapman reportedly did or allegedly did or did. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to what we've seen with the National Football League, Haas, with the way that they've handled domestic abuse, domestic violence in the past, mm-hmm. and they have received a lot of slack and rightly so for their lack of handling of the situation. So Major League Baseball, I hope that they did their due diligence, did their research, did their investigation, and came up with the punishment that did fit the crime. So I hope that they didn't take that concession, because then it would leave me to believe that they're not as serious, about the conversation of domestic abuse amongst their athletes. But that's a conversation that I think we will continue to have in all of sports, really, when it comes to, you know, the NHL had that conversation I think earlier this year with Slava Visnov, who was on the LA Kings, had that domestic abuse charge. Same could be said with Patrick Kane, although that kind of dissolved. So a lot has been happening domestic abuse-wise in sports, and I think now that you have more of a focus put on it,
exactly.
That's when the conversation begins to become a lot more serious and a lot more gravitational for a lot of these teams. So let's see what Major League Baseball does moving forward. I just hope, going back to your initial question, I just hope that they didn't take a concession, because that would lead me to believe, oh, so you're not really in it for making sure that what you do is right from that perspective.
I agree with you 100%. Now, let's lighten it up a little bit. Like I said, it's a celebration, but glad Green and White Show. I'm Mary Tillich there. Joseph Haas here, always able to bring up any and all topics. Let's transition a little bit. Yeah, folks, we're a little music on right now, being joined by a new artist in terms of my, you know, me being able to introduce myself to her and hear a lot of her dossier. But we're going to have her talk a little bit about, you know, video production yesterday, a little bit of what her influences are in the hip-hop industry. Queen T joining us straight out of Jersey City. What's up, T? Joseph Haas here, Amiri Tuluk there. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. I'm feeling good, feeling great. How about you guys?
We're doing awesome. Yeah, you know, a little celebration. I know it's a little early for birthday cake, but it's Amiri's birthday, so I decided birthday cake for everybody. We'll hand you a slice of cake. And first question to you, T. First of all, who are your influences in hip-hop, you growing into the industry? Who's behind? What's the driving force behind you? What makes you want to be the artist you are?
I'm influenced by many of artists out there, mostly the entrepreneurs, like they've got their own business and everything. So, first and foremost, I love Jay-Z, Queen Latifah, you know, everybody that's doing more than one thing in music because it's more than just music. So, yeah, it's just a lot of people I'm influenced by. We'll be here forever talking about who I'm influenced by. The main people are like Jay-Z, Queen Latifah, MC Light, you know, the originals that already paved the way and already have their direction of where they're going in life. I just look at them, the platform they on, and I'm trying to get there as well. So, you know,
right,
just to keep striving for the best.
So, you know, you mentioned Queen Latifah, Jay-Z, you mentioned how they kind of paved the way for what you're able to do. What's on your playlist now? What are some modern artists, hip-hop artists, music in general that you're listening to? Who's at the top of your iPod right now?
The top of my iPod is like, I got all the original Jay-Z's and stuff, but yeah. J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar for the right now, they've been on repeat.
Oh,
they
sweet,
speak
sweet.
The truth. They speak for the people and they get to, you know, the urban and all that. So they speak to different parties. That's what I like it too, because they just not dumb down music or nothing like that. They don't do it like crazy, yada yada yada. It makes sense. Put it like that.
Right.
I like music that makes sense. Something I could really vibe to and listen to.
Right. Right.
Mhm.
So when it comes to, you know, then you know, Jay-Z's influence, for example, how do you develop your technique as a rapper? We're gonna play your song coming up a little bit later, but when it comes to your technique and like the flow that you bring, do you try to emulate that after anybody, or do you pick up certain characteristics, or do you try to keep that as original as possible when you're rapping?
I try to keep it as original as possible because I don't want people to be like, oh, she sounds like she's from down south, or she sounds like she's copying off of this and that. I just want them to be able to listen to it for themselves so they could be like, okay, I like her sound. And when they hear another song of mine, they could be like, oh, I heard her before, but that if they can't get the name, they could go on my YouTube or whatever and just look it up from there. But I like to have my own sound and be creative with everything that I do.
All right, and we also want you to give everybody your YouTube handle, your Twitter handle, so they can also go and follow you and check out the rest of your dossier, because you got more than one song. We're going to play your one song right now, 5-5, so you don't have to guess about the hype, but she still packs a punch. tell everybody your Twitter handle and your YouTube so they can go check you out.
Everything is Queen T. Carter, or Carter Queen. That's my Gmail, Carter Queen 2. YouTube is Queen T. Carter. Facebook, Twitter, everything is Queen T. Carter. Instagram, everything. Snapchat, everything.
And everybody who follows along with the Green and White Show as well knows I'll be tweeting out links to the videos, tweeting out links to the YouTube as well as the Twitter, so you guys can jump on and listen to a young lady do her thing.
Before
we let you go, I know you were out there doing the video shoot. Tell me about that experience. How was it? Did you love the feel? What was the vibe like, T?
I loved it. It was so exciting. I was just ready to get everything done and over with so I could look at the finishing product, you know. Because, like, as you're doing it, you want to see how you're looking on camera. So I was like, all right, let me just kill this real quick so I could see the actual video. But everything went well. I was real proud of myself and proud of how my team helped out, supporting everything. Because, you know, it's just not me. It's teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work. So I had to have everybody cooperating with me. And everything fell into place. So I'm very proud of me and my team.
That's awesome to hear, folks. And folks, like I said, please go ahead, follow her on Twitter. Can't wait for that as well. And for those who don't know, Queen T is definitely easy on the eyes as well as a great listen. T, we're going to play your song right now as we let you go. Thank you so much for getting up early. I know you had all that to do yesterday and stuff, so really appreciate you getting up early, joining us. It's a celebration. We get to play a little music. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to get this started. T, really appreciate you. I'll catch you again, all right?
Thank you. Stay
you
blessed.
Got it. Amen. Queen T, coming up.
Five, five, thick thighs, nice man, brown eyes, small waist, pretty face, wanna get to know me, ask for dinner date, feed me great to run at a fireplace, juice is flowing, he wanna have that thing taste, that's for me to know and you to find out, OD of my love, Amy Winehouse, got you tripping there, now you tripping there, now you rocking here, seeing your lane, no stopping here, talk on that talk, but you bitching here. Now you wanna act tough cause your bitch is here. Shorty, I pop off, no bitch in me. Now it's plain to see who you're trying to be. It's your girl, Queen T. Back in his bitch like I never left. Fucking the game up like you stole something. Always asking, let me hold something. You ain't give a shit back. He can really stop fucking king in this game. Straight up respect. Nothing was given to me, fucking worth it at. Look me up and down like I'm hurting that. And when I step in the room, I be murking that. Murking that, yeah, I'm murking that. Laughing to the fucking bank. Don't care what bitches say. All about my fucking cream, getting money with my team, living out my fucking dreams. And they love the way I spaz on them, how to send them cheese, shake glass on them. Let me get this cash on them, more money, more problems, do the math on them. I'm from that garden state, and if you get them away, better guard your face. Too big for the small talk, y'all, I'm too short, try to box, you got it. Stupid is, stupid doesn't, just being honest. Your girl straight hood, man, I'm just being modest. Oh, so serious, why so serious? Point blank, period. There's no way I would never stop. Hell no, I would never stop. The poop if I ever drop. My sound off is like glass off. They call the cops. My city's unorthodox. Cross the line, trying to test me. Cause I keep it so official like a referee. And the best is me.
Yes, we do know that. Queen T dropping a little something. Everybody, don't forget 5-5. We're going to send out the links for her YouTube, Gmail. Go ahead, hit her up for all that other stuff. Amiri, just like she said when she was on here, everything she said about team, about what she's after and how she is, you can hear it in that cut right there. So great to see a young artist getting up. Can't wait to see her blow up.
Yes, sir. That was great to have her on the program as well, as you mentioned, and, you know, representative for both of us here, obviously, in New Jersey. Holding down the Garden State well.
Yes, yes. Speaking of holding it down, Amiri always does. Let's get into Orion Fitzpatrick. Amiri, go.
Yes, sir. The listeners out there, you can go check me out throughout the week at JG Sports Talk on Twitter, at Amiri Tulla as well. It's AmiriTulloch.
And on Twitter as well, 24/7 at Jersey Haas. Joseph Haas NFL at gmail.com is the inbox. My inbox is your inbox. You know, you can always set us up. In the meantime, it's the top of the hour. Man, talk about an outstanding fight time. You know we're going to talk a little fight, but, you know, it's a celebration, Amiri. So we're not going to hog up all the time. We're going to get joined by our good friend, Bigger Batter Benway, just to kick a little knowledge. Speaking of kicks, punches, throws, takedowns, what an outstanding weekend of fighting. And it's Sunday today. Brian. Oh, what's good, homie?
Happy birthday, Mr. Tulla. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
Bro, I had President Kennedy.
Oh, man. I had nothing to do with that, man. I had absolutely nothing to do with that. Maybe I did. Brian Benway joining us on the program with his rendition of Happy Birthday. Loving it. Loving you, my man. Yo, let's get right into this so we can turn this around. I'm going to give Amiri a slice of cake, let him chow down, and listen to us talk really briefly about all of the major fights that went on. I mean, come on. UFC 196. Is there anything else we could talk about? I mean, talk about two straight upsets. You got Holm going in, Tate coming out. That's a cupcake with the title. And the great Conor McGregor. put to sleep by another fighter, Nate Diaz. Somebody here said something about a second round fight. We'll talk about that and more. Brian, your thoughts on last night's amazing UFC 196?
I was surprised by one of them, and I wasn't surprised by the other. Let's start with the main event. I was very surprised that McGregor lost that fight last night. I didn't think that Diaz could be ready to go in a week and a half and beat McGregor. McGregor had been training for quite some time, so I guess that just proves that Diaz is always ready to fight. You always have to be ready and in fight shape. I honestly didn't see that fight going that way, and I think the last time we were on the show a couple of weeks ago, I had mentioned I didn't think that Diaz was going to win that fight at all. But it came at a time where you really have to watch. You have to have your head on a swivel, so to speak, in the cage. And that's exactly what happened. So that one surprised me. I didn't think McGregor was going to lose, but I'll tell you what it does. It kind of throws a tizzy into what Dana White was trying to do. He had McGregor, who is very marketable. He's one of those people who's very polarizing, and that's what you want in your sport. You either love him or you hate him. There's no middle ground with him, and he had a groundswell of support. He was getting a very great following, had a good following for a while. So that one surprised me. On the ladies' side, Miesha Tate, I always thought that she was going to be the one to beat Ronda Rousey back in the day. Now, clearly she didn't, but I saw in Miesha Tate a while ago, and I've seen her fight in person several times when I used to work for Yahoo Sports and I used to work in Vegas. So I've seen Miesha Tate before, and I liked her style. I liked her aggressiveness. And you know what this makes Holly Holm? This makes Holly Holm Buster Douglas. If you remember, Buster beat Mike Tyson and then didn't do anything really after that for the rest of his career. So Holly Holm is like one-hit wonder. So if you want to do Chumbawamba's Tub Thumping, remember that song back in the 90s? One-hit wonder for Holly Holm. She was the Buster Douglas of UFC women's fighting. And now you've got to wonder, with Miesha Tate, what's the next matchup here? Do you get a Holly Holm rematch? Do you bring in Rousey in 6-8 months? I don't know what really happens. There's not a whole lot of talent on that side of the coin. But, yeah, one of those fights surprised me. That was McGregor losing. And the other one honestly didn't surprise me, but I wouldn't have thought it would have been in that fashion. But all in all, pretty entertaining night.
Very entertaining night. I know Holly Holm and Holly Holm fans might take a little exception to the Buster Douglas comparison. Holly Holm, one of the first, actually the first woman to hold both, to have won a boxing title as well as an MMA title. Really known in the boxing world as a great striker. But here's what happened, and here's what it was a real flaw in her game in terms of getting taken to the ground. And you're going to see the same flaw come up in Miesha Tate's game, and it's the reason why Ronda Rousey has taken her out the two times they fought. Miesha Tate doesn't protect her face. She didn't protect her face last night, even in the win. And if she gets in the ring with Ronda Rousey and doesn't protect her face, she's going to lose that belt to Rousey, and she's going to lose a third bout to Rousey. As far as Nate Diaz is concerned, I was telling you a month ago, tweeting you, telling you, hey, look, I think DeSantos has an opportunity to take out McGregor. I think any of these guys that are bigger has an opportunity to take out McGregor just because of the size. And that ended up being the factor in this fight. You just couldn't see him carrying around that weight. As far as the future fights are concerned, we're going to see Miesha Tate end up fighting Ronda Rousey. And as far as the men are concerned, McGregor's already been listed as the number one contender at 155. So he doesn't just have to defend his 145 belt as well, though he is the champion there. I know Frankie Muir is waiting for him there. So a lot to go on in the fight game. There are also some boxing matches as well. We got a WBA interim champion, Luis Ortiz, takes out King Kong, Tony Thompson, and then Jesse Vargas, 27-1 now, with another win, this time over New York's Saddam Ali. So I wanted to get all of the fighting out of the way, all of the boxing, all of the MMA. I didn't even get into the Bellator stuff, all right? So it was just a great weekend of fighting as well. But the pink elephant in the room, Brian, Peyton Manning calling it a career. That's it. On Monday, it'll be official. Peyton Manning will be retiring. Brian Quick, your thoughts before I pass it to Amiri.
Yeah, you look at Peyton Manning, and we know he's one of the best quarterbacks that we have seen, and I think it's perfect timing for him to go out with all the HGH talk now, all of this coming back out from 20 years ago with the whole thing at Tennessee. So he's going to be in the news a lot with those two stories. And if you look at Peyton Manning talent-wise, clearly he did not have it this year. He didn't really do a whole lot in the playoffs, and he was actually kind of lucky that Brock Osweiler got injured when he did, or else Osweiler probably would have been the guy that led the Broncos to the Super Bowl. But when you look at Peyton Manning, clearly one of the best play callers. He was basically his offensive coordinator for all those years when he was in Indy, called his own plays pretty much in Denver, had a lot of audibles, as we saw. So Peyton, one of the most technical quarterbacks, very good, one of the best. I still don't put him as the top quarterback of all time, and I know that's a great debate. I'm still going to put Tom Brady ahead of Peyton Manning. I still am going to put Joe Montana in front of Peyton Manning. So I think I maybe have him third on the all-time list, but there's no question that Peyton did a lot. What I'll remember him for mostly in the playoffs, for not getting it done in the two Super Bowls that he won, was not a huge factor at all. I think he has some of the most playoff losses by a quarterback in the first playoff game of the year. So that's how I remember him. Very great in the regular season, but below average when you talk about playoffs and you talk about Super Bowl. And again, one of the best all time, but he's getting out, I think, at the right time. His skill set faded very quickly. We saw he didn't have the zip on his arm that he used to, but all in all, had a heck of a career, all-time leader in a ton of different categories, and he's one of those guys that people really wanted to cheer on. One of the best of all time. Going down, I think it's a perfect time just because of all the off-the-field stuff that's going to be coming out, but you have to say that he's definitely one of the best ones we've ever seen play.
Now, we're here talking about Peyton Manning. Obviously, his impact on the league will be tangible. What's the biggest difference that you think you're going to notice, or that other teams will have to change or notice next year when he's no longer manning the ship there in Denver?
It's interesting because we don't know a whole lot about Brock Osweiler. Yeah, we saw him beat the Patriots this year. He had some pretty big wins early on. I think he went 3 wins for Denver, I believe, before he got hurt. So we still don't know a whole lot about him and what Osweiler can do on the field. And I think one of the things is going to be, like I mentioned, is that Peyton Manning was the guy that basically called his plays. He called his shot, so to speak. So you knew that he had the ability to change the plays on the fly and to call what he was looking for. The intelligence that he had, I think, was key. What I think you want to try and do with Osweiler is you probably want to see what his weaknesses are. Is he susceptible to the rush? Can he throw on the run? Can he audible plays? So I think that's going to be a big thing. It's just kind of finding the weaknesses of what Brock Osweiler has and look at it that way. But I think when you look at Osweiler, has a heck of an arm, has a cannon, and he has the young enthusiasm that you see in a lot of these quarterbacks that want to win and want to prove themselves. So I think that's the big thing, is he's going to be coming in now as the starter for all intents and purposes, because he's going to get that contract extension I saw over the weekend as well. So you look at him, he's going to want to come out and prove something. He had a 2-time Super Bowl champion, Peyton Manning, that retired. He's now replacing a legend. So what's he going to be like? I have confidence in him. I thought he played great. I mean, he beat the Patriots at home, had a couple of big wins. So I think Denver will be just fine. It's just going to be, how do you adjust to what his strengths and weaknesses are? Can he be as effective as calling plays as Manning was, is changing the play? What will his style be? I think that's going to be the big thing that we're all going to have to look at, and defensive coordinators are going to have to look at against him when we start play here this year.
Interesting. We're talking about Peyton Manning here with the Brian Van Way special here on the Green and White Show. So when it comes to Peyton Manning's legacy, Haas and I were discussing this earlier, and I've asked this question to all of the guests, but I want to kind of put a little twist on this. You know, obviously Peyton Manning had to make the decision after the Super Bowl. If he had lost, if the Denver Broncos didn't pull through, would Peyton Manning have continued to play, or would he have retired? What are your thoughts on that decision that he obviously would have had to make?
It's a great question, and I think the way I see it is this. Like I kind of said earlier, if Osweiler didn't get hurt, Osweiler would have probably played the rest of the season, and he probably would have led them into playoffs. So I think we have to start there. So let's say that Manning didn't have the Osweiler injury. I think he would have went somewhere else. And if the Broncos would have lost in the playoffs with Osweiler, if they would have lost in the Super Bowl with Osweiler, I think Manning would have gone and signed somewhere else. I think the Broncos clearly knew early in the year that they wanted to move on from Peyton, because we saw early in the year he just didn't have the zip on his arm like mm-hmm. he used to. I mean, he had one touchdown pass for a long time. He just wasn't the same Peyton. And I think Denver was a little bit upset that they had to put him back in as the starter, because they took him out. They replaced him, and they said, oh, it's because of his injuries. Clearly, I think it was because he wasn't performing well. That's just what I see there. So I think if they hadn't won the Super Bowl, and if Osweiler would have been the guy, I think Peyton would have tried to have signed somewhere else. I don't think he wanted to give it up. I think he was kind of, I don't want to use the term forced out, because I don't think it was that heavy-handed, but I think the Broncos really were trying to push him towards that direction in retiring, so they wouldn't have to kind of deal with the controversy of Osweiler being the younger, better quarterback in this stage of his career, and dealing with all the off-the-field drama, the HGH stories, and all of the stories about Tennessee. So I think Denver's extremely happy with this, but I think Peyton Manning probably would have tried to have played somewhere else had they not won the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, getting a lot of push from not just the Denver Broncos, also family and friends, and just everybody wanting that story to end, you know, kind of in a storybook manner. Real quickly, guys who Hall of Famers who ended their careers on other teams. Who remembers where Emmitt Smith ended his career? Not in Dallas.
Arizona.
Arizona. Who remembers where Jerry Rice ended his career? Not in San Francisco.
Oakland.
Not in Oakland. Not in Oakland. Seattle.
Oh, Seattle.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. You get just like Joe Namath going to the LA Rams. We've seen a lot of those players who end up, you know, just wanting to hold on for a little bit more, maybe holding on a little too long. People will think of Justin Tuck.
You forgot Joe
champion.
Montana.
Well, yeah, I was trying to avoid Joe Montana because that's my guy, so I wasn't going to put him down.
That's your boy, like, yeah.
Hey, plus, hey, don't forget now, he went to Kansas City and won a playoff game there. I don't remember Jerry Rice or Emmitt Smith winning playoff games in their reincarnations.
Oakland's together a nice receiver core, though. Oakland's probably putting together one of the better receiving cores, you know, we've seen, young receiving core as well.
Look, watch out for Oakland next season, folks. Watch out for Oakland. Okay, I'll say that now. That's early. We'll all talk about that in December and go, man, did he really tell us in March to watch out for Oakland? Yep, watch out for Oakland. They're going to break through. Watch out for them in the postseason. We always watch out every time we bring our big batter Benway on. Brian, it's always awesome having you on. We'll give you a slice of cake on the way out. No mimosas in the we'll let you have a mimosa on the way out, too. Have a good one, my man. We'll catch you again next week.
Guys, have a great one. Thanks.
Awesome.
See you again.
I forgot. Also, Brian was doing a little play-by-play. I saw him doing a little hockey as well. So next time we get him on, we're going to talk a little hockey with Brian as well. So, you know, a little less fight. I had to get all that fight in, Amiri. It's been a huge weekend. I didn't even get – I mean, there were like 7 Bellator fights as well. You know, I mean, I'm really getting into this MMA thing. You know, I'm kind of doing it on the side. Big NFL all day, every day. But, you know, I'm really getting into, you know, checking out all these fighters, watching their fight logs, you know, getting to understand their, you know, the way, you know, their techniques and who would be a great matchup for who. Just like I saw this coming from a mile away, you had to see Nate Diaz about to take out McGregor. But one of the most big time, when he joins us on the program, it's nothing but fun. Let's see if I can get this to work right. Our man, Antoine Staley, who joins us on the program to talk a little hockey, he can talk a little baseball, he can talk a little football. If it's a sport, he could talk it. Twan, what up, my man? How we doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
very, very good, as well as you could tell, very energetic on a Sunday morning. People ask me how I get this amped on a Sunday morning. Well, when you wake up at, like, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to get ready for the show, you're pumped, you're ready, and I've had a couple of cups of coffee. So,
well, that helps.
It definitely helps. Let's get into, first of all, yeah, it's baseball. And that's how we started talking to begin with. So I know when baseball season comes around, I know very near and dear to your heart are those Red Sox. So let me give you the opportunity to talk a little spring training. And guess who hit the first home run of spring training? A-Rod? Really? What are your thoughts, Antoine?
Just about the Red Sox in general, I mean, it's going to be AL East is going to be very interesting, obviously. The Red Sox have improved. They got David Price, and I like the addition of Craig Kimbrell as well to the bullpen. So I'm curious to see how well they do during the regular season. But Toronto's still going to be formidable, and the Yankees have a great bullpen. I know Aromas Chapman will be out for 30 games, but eventually he'll come back, and that'll be probably the best bullpen in baseball. So you got them as well. So it should be a very, very interesting division, the AL East. But I don't know how it's going to work out necessarily, but I'm curious to see, like, how great these teams can be. But I still think Toronto's not getting enough credit, the credit they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So when it comes to that, you stick in the AL East really quickly, when it comes to a team like the Yankees, Haas and I were discussing this, the Joyce Chapman situation. Your thoughts on the decision that was made, the conversation that has been had after in the aftermath of that incident?
I knew it was something was going to happen. I didn't know 30 games, but I knew it was going to be some kind of suspension, which is fine. And he accepted the suspension, and he kind of went on about his business. But that's a lot. I didn't know. Some people thought he was going to appeal it, but apparently he probably got the role. He probably got from the head stuff from people that he could appeal it, but it probably wasn't going to be overturned or anything like that. So I guess he just decided to go ahead and serve the suspension out, which I guess in that case is smart. But it's a lot of games. But at the same time, I don't know necessarily the situation. I guess we all don't necessarily, even though we kind of – it's been out there in the news and things like that. But I guess he'd just rather just go ahead and serve out the 30-game suspension and just go ahead and get it over with, which I think it's the smart thing to do in the long run.
Just to drop a little bit of the facts before Miri gets a second question in, the incident we're talking about is there was an incident at the Chapman home where he and his girlfriend, according to witnesses, there might have, you know, there was a verbal, might have gotten a little physical altercation. Here's where stories change. One says he was pushed. One says she was pushed. Either way, where the stories don't change is he goes out to his backyard and garage area and goes and gets a gun and fires off some shots. And that's really where all of this really stems from in terms of, you know, the menacing and the terrorizing nature of that act. And some are saying, well, he didn't lay a hand on her. He wasn't arrested. Why is it that the overall tenor of the situation just had a very bad smell to it. So there needed to be something done there. I agree or disagree, Amiri and Antoine.
Right. I would agree with that comment. I think Major League Baseball was kind of in a tricky position from the stance of, and I think all sports leagues are, well, if there isn't a formal charge or there isn't a formal from the police department's perspective, if there isn't something that's concrete, do you still suspend them over the allegation or vice versa? So it's an interesting conversation always, but I think the decision not to appeal was probably best for both parties involved, and I think Chapman is going to certainly have to take advantage of the 30 games from the perspective of obviously getting an opportunity to get more ready for the season because the Yankees will need him out there. But from the standpoint of him as a person trying to understand the situation a little better, I do think the 30 games so definitely offers him an opportunity to maybe do some self-reflection if he's really interested in that.
Well, I feel like the Ray Rice situation has really made a lot of people sensitive to the entire domestic violence whole thing, and leagues are really scared now, so they're kind of implementing their own policy now. So Yeah, that's kind of what it's going to be from here on out. Some people don't like it. Some people do. I think it's great that they're at least acknowledging that it is, you know, they have domestic violence issues. Like I say, whether or not you agree with the ruling with Chapman or not, that's up to your own personal preference. But at the same time, at least they're addressing the whole thing about domestic violence, which I think is obviously a good thing.
I agree completely. It's something that, and you know what? I'm going to ask this question. You know, there in this situation, I want to take the gun part of it out of the way because the beginning of the story is where, you know, it gives me pause because, you know, you get contradictory stories and conflicting stories. And then, of course, you get, you know, the girlfriend not wanting to pursue as well. What do you as a league, you know, it was easier for them in this instance because of what happened afterwards for them to say, hey, look, this was egregious because, you know, he goes off and he fires a gun. So that made it a little easier for me to handle. But, I mean, if it was just the beginning part of the story, you know, you got conflicting stories here and there, it puts everybody in a tough position. Do you guys agree or disagree when it comes to that? I know the police have to do their job. I know the league has to do their job in terms of investigating. But, you know, there are going to be two sides to a story like this. What if there is, there becomes a case where a player is adamant that nothing happened? That's the one that we've got to, you know, kind of take a look at as well. So I want to be able to bring up both sides of the argument here on the show.
All right. Well, yeah, I think the question that a lot of these leagues have to answer is how much do we want to make a stand against a certain issue, and how much do we want to try and make sure, obviously, the player is rightly or wrongly, for example, rightly, in most situations, punished, I guess. Like,
right.
you don't want to be in a situation where you are punishing somebody who's innocent. But at the same time, it becomes, well, what is it? I know it sounds like I'm just looking at it from the image perspective and perception, but I think in general, when it comes to a league like Major League Baseball, you have to uphold the standard, I guess, that, you know, certain things are just not tolerable. And while it may be a situation where you have to do further investigation to confirm or deny the allegation or the report, I think just from a base level, whenever there's something out like this, of this magnitude of domestic violence, I think that's a situation where if you're Major League Baseball, you have to take it into your own hands to kind of set that standard and make it clear that that precedent is set, that's not, you know, something that's acceptable from a player.
Yeah, I agree. I was just going to say real quick, yeah, they have to do that due diligence and really investigate both sides. And I think that's really the bottom line of it, because you never know. It could be just a situation that he could have been provoked or anything like that. I'm not excusing what Chapman did necessarily. I'm just saying that to Major League Baseball and maybe investigate it, and also the police department and things like that, to try to find out both sides of the story, because it is kind of, it's easy to, I don't want to say it's easy to just to blame the guy, but a lot of times, like when this situation, a lot of, you know, they just, when you have a guy, like, you just kind of blame, not just in the Chapman situation or in the situation, you blame the male figure when really it could have been something that could have provoked the whole thing. So I think it's going to be important, especially with millions of dollars on the line, that you have to do your due diligence and try to investigate both sides. And try to, and in all cases, you may not necessarily be able to get both sides of the story, but simply because it could be a he said, she said situation, but you're going to have to, like, really get more into it, because especially if you're talking about suspensions, and in this case, like a 30-game suspension. So, yeah, I think it's up to Major League Baseball and also the police department and a lot of people like that to try to find out really what both sides of the story are, if that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, that's $1.8 million Aroldis Chapman will not see because of this incident as well. And then, of course, this almost went and impacted his free agency, which could have meant millions and millions of millions of dollars down the road. And then you have situations like, and I'm not sure if anybody and everybody saw this TMZ video of, and I apologize, I can't remember the athlete's name, but he kind of just stood there and call it refereeing, for lack of a better term, his baby's mother versus his current girlfriend were fighting in the lobby of an apartment building, and he kind of refereed it.
Dante Fowler. That's
right.
What you talk about, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So and then where do you go in terms of a situation like that, where if there's not a camera actually showing you what he did, you know, he didn't put his hands on anybody, but clearly there was some sort of provocation and kind of acknowledgement and kind of a thumbs up as this goes on. So it's a very sticky situation, and I'm just hoping that everybody, in terms of, you know, whom needs to be punished, the right investigation, as we've all gone through and said here, takes place. Tuan, man, thanks for coming on. For it to go so serious as well, but really appreciate you, you know, getting up and spending the time with us this morning. Always a pleasure. We get to talk baseball. We'll talk baseball and other sports like hockey and that with you when you come and join us anytime, man. We appreciate you always.
All right. Y'all take care, man.
Thanks
again. It's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. You got it. Always a pleasure having Antoine Staley on, man. Y'all got to follow him on Twitter as well. Somebody that I, you know, as I was growing up in this industry, taking a look at him and watching him go on and doing bigger and better things, covering the teams as well. Can't wait to, you know, just really, really appreciate him getting up and joining us this morning. But it's about that time, Amiri. You kidding me? I look at the watch and I'm like, well, we're almost done. We're almost done. The day just started. So Brian stole the thunder with the singing of happy birthday. My mom does that for each and every one of us every year. I mean, it doesn't get old as well. So, Amiri, again, happy, happy birthday. We had an outstanding show. Man, technical difficulties aside, man, we had to juggle that first couple of minutes. But, you know, it's the Green and White show. What else would it be, right?
Yeah, there you go. Another great show, man.
Awesome, man. I'll catch you again next week. God bless. Go Jets. We're going to turn this up and take us all the way home.
Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the East, live and live in color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up. I'm winning exotic cars to women, and more women. More sinning, I'm a difficult success. Black, young, and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, new, most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shifts back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. Five.